Technorama episode 606. If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the precipitate.
Oh boy.
I think I heard that one in high school.
You probably did. It was better than the other one I had.
Still fun. Still fun. Welcome to Technorama. I'm Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona. And joining me as always is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing great.
Awesome.
Doing great.
Awesome. Holding in there. Staying healthy.
Yeah. Just trying to beat the boredom of staying around the house a lot. But
yeah.
Doing all right.
It feels, you know, even though we've been working from home for years, it still feels kind of stifled at this point. I'm getting wanderlust really bad to the point where, you know, Sunday afternoon comes around. I was like, can we just go for a drive out on the 101 loop or something?
Yeah. Well, it's one thing to, you know, voluntarily stay at home. It's another thing to have to stay at home.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay. You know,
we haven't been out to dinner with friends. We haven't been to movies. It's just, there's kind of getting a little thin on things to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've seen I've seen more movies than TV shows than I care to,
mm-hmm.
or care to admit, I should say.
Yeah, I ran out of Netflix and YouTube. What's next?
You finished him.
I finished the internet.
Yeah.
This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. So thank you again for joining us. Let us get on with some of the feedback. My soundboard is just a little out of reach, so let's just bring that in a little closer.
Right.
New toys on this end.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day. Mailman, mailman, mail today. Reach right in.
Do a totally inappropriate dance.
I love those letters.
No, yeah.
Let's find out what you got to say.
Oh, boy.
Mailman.
That was my Steve Martin. Today. Yeah. Steve Martin or Walk Like an Egyptian. The Bengals. One of the
two. If you're not watching the video, you missed it. I don't think there is a good dance for that, except just hopping around.
Yeah.
Our question of the week this week to you was, if you could hang out with any fictional or non-fictional character, which kind of encompasses all the characters, through this quarantine period, who would it be and why? And we got a lot of who's. We didn't get too many whys, but Weber Baker says, think of this. We're missing one. He kind of, let's do this in newest to oldest. Wow, Facebook again.
Instead of most relevant.
Scratch head. Yeah. So I think I got it from the bottom up. J.R.R. Tolkien, he says, think of the stories he could tell, both his own and mythological. Good storyteller would be nice right now.
Well, he's dead right now.
Well, you didn't say living or dead. They're just saying like, fictional.
That's like that question. Who would you rather have dinner with, living or dead? Someone living. Please.
John Miller Jr. says, Dr. Gregory House, it's a pandemic. That's why.
He could solve it. There you go.
I was thinking of like a professional chef just to make you the food.
Gordon Ramsay.
And Steve Pritchard had a similar thought. He said, Chef Ralph Maliki. I don't know. AKA Cookie from Nathan Lowell's Share and Seeker's Tales. All right. Wow, that's pulling from the deep, deep cuts.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. It's been a long time since I watched that. I read that, rather.
Need a great cook and help my crew function and to help guide me back to the place of confidence in the kitchen once again. Mm-hmm. John Kratzer says, Dr. Strange, make life fun by bending reality.
What, like bending balloon animals?
Dr. Strange's balloon animals.
There we go. Yeah.
It's a Hulk.
Oh, okay. He needs to work on that a little bit.
Steve from Sweden says, as a non-fictional character, I choose Adam Savage from Mythbusters to hang out at his tested cave, building stuff and just having a blast. For a fictional character, I'd select the crew of Serenity. Nathan Fillion and Jewel State are on my bucket list of people to meet. Very cool. You have to come to a con with us sometime, man, when cons become a thing again.
Yeah, I think about that one night we were all getting excited because everybody that was in the cast of the Firefly was pretty much at that bar, the Hilton.
Pretty close, yeah.
Yeah, they're all at the bar, literally.
My sister says, I haven't seen Terry, her boyfriend, in so long that I'm beginning to think he's fictional, so probably him.
Right.
Brad Miller says, Rick Sanchez. Tiffany Mangan would like to hang out with Donkey from Shrek.
Wait a minute. Brad Miller, you would want to hang out with Rick? I don't know if I want to. I don't know. It might.
That would get old really fast. Yeah. Donkey from Shrek, I think, would get a little old fast. He's quick-witted, and I need some good laughs.
Well, Shrek even kicked him out himself. He got tired of him pretty quick.
I'm all alone. There's no one here beside me. Okay. Kristen Marcus. There are so many. Kirk for the adventure. Picard for the wisdom. Firefly crew for the fun.
Wait a minute. Kirk for the adventure. You're quarantining at home.
You might have some adventures at home.
I guess. You can quarantine on a starship.
Just, Scotty, you know. Beam me into the living room.
Right.
Now, the kitchen. Emergency. Site-to-site transport. Bedroom to living room.
Look at all the energy you're wasting. Transporting from room to room.
Bridge to kitchen. I mean, galley. Yeah. Galley. Yeah, that's the word.
Yeah. See.
John Byers, my cousin, says, alive or dead? Either. Yeah, we're taking either. We're making up the rules as we go. It's the Indiana Jones effect. Make it up as you go along.
That's right.
Megan Enlow says, Richard Feynman. Terry says, hope you will see him soon. Hopefully, this will be over soon. Not sure who him is. Lone Guys Knight says, Harvey, the 6'3" white rabbit shaped puka, because it could literally stop time and take me anywhere and anyone I wanted with whomever I wanted to be there.
Wasn't that from the movie with
Jimmy Stewart?
Yeah, Jimmy Stewart. Harvey. That's right.
My granddad Carl, when he was in his prime, he was an amazing man, and I would love to learn more of what I could from him.
That's a good answer.
That is a good answer. I'd love to hang out with him.
I'd be awesome.
I knew that man just before his accident. So, yeah, I can definitely agree with that one. Amy J. Murphy says, the 11th Doctor. Do I really need to explain why?
No, you do not.
Got you there. Was that all of them? I think that was all of them. That was all the ones.
Yeah, that was pretty much it.
So thank you very much. I know people will continue to comment on those for the next few days. Have fun with that. And we will come at you with another question at the end of the show and on social media probably next Saturday. So you can do that. It feels like, why is it when we take a week off, Craig, it feels like a month off? I do a lot of productions in this studio for work and for home. But yet, if we miss 1 week of Technorama, I feel like I'm totally out of sync and nothing's where it should be. And
yeah. Well, and also, you know, it was a short week, slash long weekend. So
that's
that didn't
true.
Help either. Yeah. So I really didn't do a whole lot work wise on Thursday and Friday. So
I did.
Well,
there wasn't much else to do.
Did a few things, but nothing, only because people would leave me alone.
It was good catch up time. I have lots of things in the pipe that I need to plan for. So I use that as planning time between like 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. I got a lot done. And then I said, okay, on with the rest of the day. Sort of. Okay, let's do... You know what that music means. It's time for a parade.
That's right.
It's on this day in history for July 8th, 2020. And this is the 190th day of the Gregorian calendar. We have passed that halfway hallmark. There are 176 days remaining, and now we count down faster. It always goes faster as you get older, and you're not getting any younger, any of you. It was on this date in 1497 that Vasco da Gama set sail on the first direct European voyage to India.
And July 8th, 1853, the Peary Expedition arrived in Edo Bay with a treaty requesting trade.
Perry the Platypus?
Yeah, that was him.
141 years ago today, sailing ship USS Jeannette departed San Francisco carrying an ill-fated expedition to the North Pole. Wah, 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 wah.
It was also on this date in 1889 that the first issue of the Wall Street Journal was published.
We just listened to that podcast this morning.
Oh, did you? Oh, talking about that?
No, they didn't say anything about that, but in 1889, they didn't have a podcast.
If they did, that would have been awesome.
I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I've been podcasting since 1889.
Yeah, I know.
Where were we? Also on that date in 1932, the Dow Jones Industrial Average reached its lowest level of the Great Depression, closing at 41.22. That's 41.22.
I know. Look at it today.
Wow.
And 73 years ago today, reports were broadcast.
You said that, and that's what I read, too. I'm like, what? What? This doesn't make sense. Oh, it does if you read it right.
Yeah. 73 years ago today, reports were broadcast that a UFO crash landed in Roswell, New Mexico, in what became known as the Roswell UFO incident.
Weather balloon.
X-Files.
On July 8, 1948, the United States Air Force accepted its first female recruits into a program called Women and the Air Force, or the WAF.
WAF.
I did WAF. It was a very funny joke.
I was WAFing at it. Hey, July 8, 1960, Francis Gary Powers is charged with espionage resulting from his flight over Soviet Union.
I was just taking pictures. Also, July 8, 2011, Space Shuttle Atlantis was launched in its final mission, the USS Space Shuttle program. Doesn't it feel like we just covered that story like a year ago?
I know.
Oh, well, man.
We probably did.
No, it was nine years ago. Where is the time going?
We were podcasting then.
Yes, we were. Oh, mm-hmm. My goodness. Happy birthday goes out of the state to French mathematician and academic Christian Cramp, born on this date in 1760.
And Francis Leopold McClintock, the Irish admiral and explorer, was born 201 years ago today.
Leopold.
What did I say?
I know. I'm doing the Bugs Bunny thing. Born July 8, 1830, American lawyer and politician, the 6th United States Assistant Secretary of State, Frederick W. Seward. Why do we mention him? Because without him, there probably wouldn't be much of an Alaska for a state in the United States. It'd be a territory of Canada.
Hmm. Or Russia. Is that why Seward, the town of Seward?
Seward's Folly. Yes, that's where the town of Seward is named, Town of Seward.
Okay. American chemist and pharmacist, inventor of Coca-Cola, John Pemberton was born 189 years ago today.
We have several inventors and whatnot today.
Yeah.
And the names continue. German general and businessman, founder of the Zeppelin Airship Company. Whoopee! A Zeppelin! Ferdinand von Zeppelin was born on this date in 1838.
I was thinking the same thing. American soldier, chemist, and businessman founded Eli Lilly and Company. Eli Lilly was born 182 years ago today.
Franz von Zeppelin.
Yeah.
His brother.
Yeah.
John D. Rockefeller. Yes, that John D. Rockefeller, the American businessman and philanthropist. He founded the Standard Oil Company. He would have been 181 if he was still alive.
He might still be. You don't know. All right. Anyway, Russian physicist, academic, Nobel Prize laureate, Pyotr Kapitsa, was born on this date in 1894.
This is where it starts to get fun. Igor Tam, the Russian physicist and academic. He's also Nobel Prize laureate. He was born today in 1895.
And born July 8th, 1904, French mathematician and academic, Henri Cartan.
Henri. If it's French, it's Henri.
Excuse me. Henri. Yeah.
Do you have any great poupons?
I'm speaking English.
Russian engineer and astronaut Vitaly...
Mostly.
Savastyanov. We'll go with that. That's about how it's spelled. Savastyanov was born 85 years ago today.
And also born on the same date in 1949, Austrian-American chef, restaurateur, and entrepreneur. There's a lot of oohers in there. Wolfgang Puck.
Hey, let's hang out with him. He can make us dinner.
Yeah.
Finally, American actor and musician Kevin Bacon was born on this date in 1958. Now we're just 4 degrees away from him. Oh, the music is ending. We're going to have to do the birthdays without music. Oh. Bump. So, as promised, Mr. Trampas Whiteman, your birthday on the 8th. Happy birthday to you. And Mark Lee, when did he get in there? I don't remember. That's not Mark B. Lee. It would be M-A-R-C. No. Okay, different Mark Lee. Also on the 8th, it says stardate -351519.09.
That's before the epoch.
When is the stardate epoch? Because TOS was only like 4 digits, but TNG was 5 digits. I don't know. We're going to find that out. We do the topic of Trek, that other podcast, so we should know, right?
I smell a trivia question.
Mm-hmm. We'll have to ask Clinton because he's smarter than us.
Yeah.
Ellen Ralph is also born on the 8th, as well as Craig's wife. Craig, do you have a present for your wife?
Wait, that's this week? I'm kidding. Yes, I got it covered.
Somebody put a picture like that on Facebook. It said Thomas Jefferson on July 3rd, 1776. Oh, crap, that's due tomorrow?
I did see that.
Kevin Devon, the Kevin Devon, born on July 10th. Stephen Trow is on the 11th. Shadowbird 712 on the 12th. Oh, now I get it, where the 712 comes from. That'd be like calling me Chuck 326.
All of a sudden it's clear. Thanks, Shadowbird.
Francois is also on the 12th, so he doesn't call himself Francois 712, but he does have his year here in binary, which I won't read out. And our very good friend, Ben Raggaton of TG Geeks over at tggeeks.com, is on the 13th. Happy birthday to all of you. If it's your birthday this week, we wish you all the best. Stay safe, stay healthy, wash your hands, don't touch your face, don't touch your friend's face.
We need to get like Ben and Keith some hazmat suits so they can come in the studio
or just bring them in via Discord or something. You might be able to do that.
You can just open the window and let them sit outside
in the 114 degree heat. That'd be nice. Yeah, you guys just wait out there. That wouldn't be the first time that a guest has been outside in this studio.
You could almost put them in the guest house and you could just, you know.
Except Lisa and Grantis are in the guest house. Speaking of, let's get the birthday thing out of the way. If you want to get on the birthday calendar, go over to chuckchat.com/wiki or chuckchat.com/birthday and put your name out there. We'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. Happy birthday to all of you. Real quick story, the John D. Rockefeller thing. Also, I don't know if I've told this story or not before, but on my maternal grandmother's side, there was a marriage between someone named Doyle and my mother's maiden name was Stannard, S-T-A-N-N-A-R-D. And in the newspaper, it said Stannard Doyle, which that was kind of funny.
It is kind of funny.
And it actually did happen. Okay. That's the way it was on this day in history for July 8th, 2020. Dun, da, dun, da, dun, dun. Got to do the end of the music. And on with the news.
Top secret news, everyone.
Well, not really top secret news. You want the first one?
Not anymore. Me? Yeah, sure. So NASA, this is from June 24th, NASA names the headquarters, names their headquarters after the hidden figure, Mary W. Jackson.
This is so cool.
It is really cool. So NASA Administrator Jim Bernstein, I need to break the font a little bit bigger. Bernstein announced Wednesday that the agency's headquarters building in Washington, D.C. will be named after Mary W. Jackson, the first African-American female engineer at NASA.
Where's the Jackson applause? Where's the applause?
Yeah, there you go. So Jackson started her NASA career in the segregated West Area Computing Unit of the agency's Langley Research Center in Hampton, Virginia. Jackson, a mathematician and aerospace engineer, went on to lead programs influencing the hiring and promotion of women in NASA's science, technology, engineering, and mathematics careers. mathematics career, excuse me. And in 2019, she was posthumously awarded the Congressional Medal.
Posthumously. Posthumously. It means posthumously. Awarded after your dad.
I don't know why I keep wanting to pronounce the TH. Awarded the Congressional Gold Medal. So she was a part of a group of very important women who helped NASA succeed in getting American astronauts into space. Mary never accepted the status quo. She helped break barriers and open opportunities for African Americans and women in the field of engineering and technology. Today, Jim Bristein was saying, today we proudly announced that the Mary W. Jackson NASA headquarters building, it appropriately sits on the Hidden Figures Way. Remember, they renamed the street.
Oh, that's right. We covered that story
about a month or two ago.
Yeah.
Or
ago. It felt like a month or two. It was probably 3 years ago.
Yeah. No, it wasn't quite that far. It was not long after the movie.
It was within the last year, because I remember watching the movie on our Israel trip last May 2019.
Right.
And then we had the story shortly after it.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's her. You can go find out more about her. You can read the whole article or go check out the movie. It's on my list. I'm going to be watching it here this week, actually.
Absolutely. Good movie. Yeah. Good movie. Second story is there's a scientist that says he's built a jet engine that turns electricity directly into thrust.
Yeah, you just need a Mr. Fusion and some beer and cans and a banana peel.
No. Says, if this plasma propulsion tech is real, it could change everything. Here we go. We're not making any promises. We haven't validated these facts with anybody. This is from futurism.com. I almost thought it said futurama.com, but it doesn't.
No.
This past autumn, a professor at Wuhan University named Zhao Tang was hard at work piecing together a thruster prototype that at first sounds too good to be true. The basic idea, he said in an interview, I'm going to make this font a little larger. What's with the small fonts these days?
As we're getting older, the fonts are getting smaller.
I'm going for glasses on Wednesday, by the way.
I was going to say, we need to go get our prescriptions checked.
Yeah. I get something checked. The basic idea, he said in an interview, is that the device turns electricity directly into thrust. No fossil fuels required. By using microwaves to energize compressed air into plasma state and shooting it out like a jet, Tang, we'll go with Tang, the stuff astronauts were supposedly drinking.
There you go. There's
Tang suggested, without a hint of self aggrandizement, I'm massacring that long word, that could likely be scaled up enough to fly large commercial passenger planes. Eventually, he says, it might even power spaceships. Needless to say, these are grandiose claims. A thruster that doesn't require tanks of fuel sounds suspiciously like science fiction. That, I know, bad sound effects. They're part of the show. Get used to it. Like the jets on Iron Man's suit in the Marvel movies, for instance, or the thrusters that allowed Doc Brown's DeLorean to fly in Back to the Future. But in Tang's telling, his invention, let's just call it the Tang Jet, good name, which he worked on with Wuhan University collaborators Dan Yi and Jun Li, could have civilization shifting potential here on the non-fictional world. Quote, essentially, the goal of this technology is to try and use electricity and air to replace gasoline, he said. I'm wondering if you need that much electricity, where is this stored? Because you're going to be hauling around some batteries, and batteries are heavy.
Yeah, a little bit later in the article, somebody says it's interesting, but doesn't know if it's going to quite scale, a 1,000 times or whatever you'd need to be able to do a plane. That's what they said about the plane was pretty soon you're just flying a battery, pushing a battery around.
Yeah. Well, we can take two passengers, but not their luggage.
Yeah. So anyway, I think it's pretty cool, but I don't know. Maybe he's got something.
Yeah. And it's nice to see people working on new and different technologies that, stretch us in different directions. I mean, that's how we grow and we learn. And even if it doesn't work and it becomes another flying car, we've got that experience and somebody else might be able to leverage it.
It's just like you and I, Chuck, pushing the envelope every day with podcasting.
Every show, we learn something new. And maybe someday We'll get it.
We're pushing
right.
something. I don't know what it is.
We're pushing something. There's our sound bite. We should call this show. We're pushing something.
Yeah, pushing some buttons.
All right. Next anyway. Story.
All right. So the next story is, I know I haven't ever ordered anything accidentally like this.
I have.
Especially a,
not like this. You, not like this, but I've gone to Amazon and there'd be somebody else put something in the cart and I didn't know it was there and I just went, order. And went, whoa.
Cancel. I can't cancel. Anyway, a man accidentally buys 28 Tesla cars online worth 1.4 million euros.
That's a nice accidental purchase.
Right. So Tesla cars have earned a massive fan following around the world and are raved as much for being technologically advanced and being all electric as for drawing eyeballs and being a status symbol of sorts. Little wonder that those with enough financial resources often end up having one in their garage. But even the richest of the rich may have never purchased 28 in one go. That, however, is what happened to a German man. He did that inadvertently when he tried to make a single unit purchase.
Wait, is there like a quantity that you can just click up to 28?
Actually, I'm surprised for something like this, there is a quantity. Because I figure once you pick one, you wouldn't go, I'm going to do two of these.
Please anyway. Enter your credit card number. And it was approved. Think of the points he's got now.
Yeah. He not only gets a free cruise, but he gets a free cruise ship. To go on with. Anyway, according to a post on Reddit, which has now been widely reported in global news outlets, the man in question accidentally spent 1.4 million euros on 28 Tesla cars. The post was written by the man's son, who explained how a technical glitch on the Tesla website caused the audaciously expensive error.
Love to see Donna's face when that pops up on her phone. Your Capital One credit card has just had a purchase and the zeros don't fit on the notification.
Yeah. Oh, 2800. Okay. Just anyway. So, I think what happened was he basically, pressed the order button multiple times or something like that. And all it did, 28 clicks meant 28 purchases. So that's basically what happened.
Wait, you clicked the same button 28 times. You deserve this bill. I'm sorry. That's like,
how many times have you looked over somebody's shoulder that is maybe not as technically savvy as you and they're double clicking links and stuff. And I'm like, you just have to click it once.
I had one this afternoon.
All right. Well, you know, I'm not naming names,
but the conversation went like this. Okay. Go up to the top where your browser tabs are. No. Up to the top, above the address bar, top, to the tabs. Okay, you see the one that says X? Go one tab to the right, and then hit the plus and open up a new tab. Like, no, I didn't say click plus. Wow. Yeah. I'm sorry. I was just ready to hit my head on the Formica at that point. Go ahead.
I tell you what, just hit Control T. No, on the keyboard, the Control.
Put the computer back in the box and send it back to Dell.
Yeah. Anyway, they did contact Tesla and they canceled the order, of course.
You heard me, right? You heard some of that? Yeah, Donna's nodding. I'm not making this up. I was working this morning. No, this afternoon's call. I think you were reading a book or something. You didn't hear any of that? Yeah, okay. Ow, it was painful.
They're probably trying to ignore you. Right?
It's just trying. My book is, I need a louder book. No, she was listening to her an audiobook. All right. I know strange things happen, but this kind of reminds me of the people who don't get their print out on the printer, so they click print like 18 more times. I didn't get my car yet. Order hey. Another one. I didn't get my car yet.
Yeah, if the first print job didn't go, let's go see why the printer's not working first rather than trying to print it five times.
It's like a log jam. One of these is going to bust it loose.
Yeah, it's got to burn its path. Yeah.
And we're just going to take dynamite to your computer to loosen up the logjam.
Speaking of which, the other day I was helping somebody with their printer and I was like, why is this thing continuously printed? Once I fixed it, I was like trying to figure out why everything was just printing out on it. And I looked and there was like you said, there's like 20 jobs sitting in the print queue. I was like, oh, let's cancel those real quick before the rest of them get there.
I had some of those with printers. Workflows that weren't ending properly, and then I discovered there's like seven of them running. Going, oh, wait, I was just doing tests. Yeah. So, all right, this next one.
That I hate printers. I don't think I've mentioned that before.
When's the last time you used a printer?
Friday.
Oh, sorry to hear
not
that.
Me personally, not for me, but
oh, okay.
Sorry, Thursday.
Someone in the household printed something this week.
No, I was helping somebody else with printers. Okay. And it wasn't just a regular printer. It was one of the Ricoh stand-up scanner with three bins, you know, nice office printer kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay. I was thinking inkjet time.
Oh, no. No. This is a big laser printer.
Gotcha.
I don't want to get into it. I could get into it, but I'm not going to get into it.
Save it for the Patreon show. Is that what you're saying?
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Actually.
We can do more crazy repair stories or something. All right. Well, next one. The headline really got me on this one. We've bought the wrong satellites.
They were supposed to buy 28 Teslas instead. Oh.
And launch those into space. Just kidding. The UK government's plan to invest hundreds of millions of pounds in a satellite broadband company has been described as nonsensical by experts who say the company doesn't even make the right type of satellite the country needs after Brexit. The investment in OneWeb, first reported on Thursday night, is intended to mitigate the UK's loss of access to the EU's Galileo satellite navigation system. But OneWeb, in which the UK will own 20% stake following the investment, currently operates a completely different type of satellite network from that typically used to run such navigation systems. Quote, the fundamental starting point is, yes, we bought the wrong satellites, unquote. Said Dr. Bledin Bowen.
Imagine going to your boss and say, hey, look, okay, crazy story, but we brought the wrong satellites.
But we're going to have one heck of a weather report every morning. Yeah. OneWeb is working on basically the same idea as Elon Musk's Starlink, a mega constellation of satellites in low Earth orbit, which are used to connect people on the ground to the internet. That's in the clouds. So they're very low orbit because, you know, clouds are very low.
Yeah.
Can you imagine how fast a satellite would have to be going if it was as high as the clouds? Wow. All right. What's happened is that the very talented lobbyists at OneWeb have convinced the government that they can completely redesign some of the satellites to piggyback a navigation payload on it. It's bolting an unproven technology onto a mega constellation that's designed to do something else. It's a tech and business gamble. Giles Thorne, a research analyst at Jefferies, agreed. This situation is nonsensical to me, he said. This situation looks like nationalism trumping solid industry policy. Every major positioning system currently in use, the America's GPS, Russia's GLONASS, China's Baidu, and Galileo, the EU project that the UK helped design before losing access due to Brexit, is in a medium Earth orbit. Thorne said approximately 20,000 kilometers from Earth. OneWeb satellites, 74 of which have already been launched, are in a low Earth orbit, just 1,200. Okay, compare that. 20,000 to 1,200 kilometers. Bit of a difference.
Slight difference. Yeah.
Bowen said, if you want to replace GPS for military-grade systems, where you need encrypted, secure signals that are precise to centimeters, I'm not sure you can do that on satellites as small as OneWeb's. So, someone made a mistake here. We'll let you read the rest of the article. It's kind of comical.
I wonder if they can just cancel the order.
Not if they're already launched.
Yeah. Amazon, can I change my Prime order?
What's the restocking fee on this?
Yeah, restocking fee.
You bring them down in good working order, in original packaging.
Right.
We'll send them back. All right. Should we take a break or should we just keep on muscling through this?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Let's go for it. We'll keep the show just a wee bit shorter for you. I don't think we had a promo or anything. We could probably just play Richard Hatch again real quick. Nobody ever gets tired of Richard Hatch.
No.
This is Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica, Tom Zarek, and the original Captain Apollo. And you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
There's a show on Amazon Prime called I Know That Voice, where they talk to a lot of the voice actors for cartoons and games and whatnot. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure Bill Farmer's on there, because when he came on there, I thought of our ID. This is your old pal, Mr. Haney.
Yeah. I used to be able to do that voice.
You're listening to, what's her name again? Oh, yeah. Chuck and Craig on Technorama. All righty. So we have fun with that. Shout out to the chat room. We've got a number of people in there. I'm going to take a quick look. I've got John Miller Jr., Christina Norris. Thank you very much for joining us. Jeff Deal was on there. And I can't believe his oldest son is 18. I said, weren't we just making that like third grade Sunday school video like 2 years ago?
Chuck, that was a long time ago.
Not to me, it wasn't. Steve Cody, one of our newest Patreon members. We'll give him a shout out in just a sec. John Miller Jr., I think I already said that. Christy Joy says she's listening now. And that's what I've got on my end. What do you see?
I see Jeff Deal.
How do you say? He's not your friend. How does that show up?
Jeffrey P. Deal.
I know. I thought you could only see your own friends.
Well, how do you know I don't know him?
You've been going to my church in Appleton?
Maybe. Maybe I went to the University of Winston or Wisconsin.
Again with the name.
Winston.
Henri. It's Henri, Craig.
I was going to be all slick and stuff. Maybe I went to school. Anyway.
Nice. Nicely planted foot in manure. Yeah.
Right.
All right. Speaking of our wonderful patrons, it's time to give a shout out to our terrific patrons because they help keep the show funded. And there's bandwidth and equipment and all that other good stuff. And this takes care of it. There's actually positive funding in the bank at the moment. In fact, Craig, I think I owe you for some money for Auphonic fees. So don't let me forget. It's time to settle up our debts on that. Thank you.
About $3,000.
We don't have that much. Somewhere south of that. Thank you to Alexis Duran, Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen, Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, Chris MC. Thank you, Dandy Mancoyer, Danny Mortensen, all the way from Australia. Thank you, Dean Jensen. Thank you, Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros from Florida, Harold McKinstry, John Clifford, John Noble, Jorga Schrauen from Belgium, Christina's in Thailand now, if I remember right. Kyle in Hawaii. Hey. We're just going to name wherever they're from. I hope I'm not giving away any privately held information here.
Yeah.
Leon from Dragon Con.
Yeah. Well, not now, but yes.
Mark Kilfoyle from New Brunswick. Mike Wills, Indianapolis area, if I remember right. People are going to tell us if we're wrong. Night Gig Studios. Where's JT Shea from again?
Florida.
Saturday Morning Media from California. Stephen Wetchie.
Burbank.
Is he in Burbank?
I think so.
He's in there somewhere, the LA area. Steve Therian, Spiffy, Steve Cody, and Steve from London. Or Steve from Sweden. His last name's London. Almost name got away London. With it. Steve from Sweden. Thank you very much. If you want to be a patron for as little as a dollar a show and help support this nonsensical chaos, you can do so over at patreon.com/technoramapodcast, and we would greatly appreciate it. You could help get your name enshrined on the show, and you get content that nobody else gets in the world except for these 28 people. These exclusive club. There's a show we do. We record it right after this one, and it gets released before what you're listening to. It just mixed up. We release the Patreon show on Mondays. We release this one on Wednesdays. And there's a conversation that goes on between me and Craig. And it can go any which direction.
Sometimes it leaves me in tears, but... Oh, you mean on the Patreon.
Yes,
oh,
on the Patreon.
I thought you meant like our personal...
Stop thing. Chopping onions when you're doing the show. All right, so thank you very much, and let's send the band out. There we go. Back to that. We have a show to review. Where's my pass the remote thing?
Yeah.
It was this one.
Oh, you get you.
Other way. Should, gotcha.
We have to get remotes next time so it'll work.
I have a very small remote here.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Here. Okay. Show I want to talk about this time is called Tales from the Loop. It's on Amazon Prime. It's about a small town. They've got some sort of research facility. It looks kind of like it's underground. I don't know. It's sort of circular, so you can think it may be some sort of particle collider, but they're not really specific. Yeah. There is some kind of crazy, like spherical thing made up of different chunks of rock that has some power to it. But it's almost like a Twilight Zone, but it carries through the same characters through the series. So one may focus on, you know, this lady, and the next episode is her neighbor. And you see the lady in the next episode, but she's not a primary character. She's more of a secondary or tertiary character. And then they talk about grandma and grandpa, and there's a little bit of mystical time travel thing in one of the episodes. I think it's the first one. You're like, what just happened here? And I liked it. I liked it. It was a little slow in spots, but very enjoyable. I liked the writing. The acting was good. If I remember right, the first season went over like a year. Was it one season or two? Do you remember, Donna? I just don't remember. I know it's at least one because that's what I have in my notes is season one. And I wouldn't mind watching a second season. So the course of it starts like in the spring, and then they go all the way through to the following spring. And then they follow up. So I give this about a 7.5 out of 10. I haven't looked on what Rotten Tomatoes or IMDb rates it, but that's just my rating. Good sci-fi flick. Again, decent writing, decent time. If you're sitting inside like a lot of us and you want something to watch, Tales from the Loop.
I did. Hey, I will say there's two shows that I started watching. One was, remember Unsolved Mysteries? That shows up. That showed up on Netflix as a new, with new episodes.
I saw that.
So we, Kim and I and Harrison watched the first three, and it's kind of like the old show, except for Robert Stack, obviously not there. They don't have a host. It's kind of like hostless now. You know, they kind of have
a show like that needs a good host.
I think it needs the host, and you know, they have like some of the. You know, reenactments, you know, they used to do the dramatic reenactment kind of stuff. Anyway, it's okay. I had a couple of the first three were interesting stories. And then I started watching Stargirl, which is on DC Universe. It's a character called Stargirl. She has, you have to go check it out. Anyway, you can go see the previews for it on YouTube. So it's a superhero thing. About the Justice Society, you know, the Golden Age characters, like you know, there's Green Lantern and there's Starman, which is her dad, and some other characters. Anyway, you go check it out. I'll give a more in-depth review when I get done with it. So
okay, sounds good. We also have a quick Media Corner segment.
Welcome to Blockhead Video. Ding.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the Media Corner.
I sound so young in that clip.
Yeah, you do. Because you recorded it
15 years ago.
Oh,
stop. This is from Steve from Sweden. He sent us a note, actually a YouTube link. About a new Stargate projects, a new Stargate project gets a one-word update. I'm not going to spoil what that word is, but if you are a Stargate fan, whether you're part of the original SG-1 or Stargate Universe or Atlantis or there's even been some follow-ons, go check it out. It's worth the watch. There's possible new projects coming down the road. Kind of one of these, maybe, you know, interpret the news the way you want kind of thing. So go over to the show notes. You can find that at chuckchat.com/technorama, episode 606.
Hey, you watched, I'm trying to remember, how many of these series, Stargate, did you watch?
I watched all of SG-1. Mm-hmm. I watched all of SGU. That was only two seasons. I am still looking for a place to find Atlantis. So I've not seen Atlantis yet.
Okay. I never really, I mean, I watched the original film, but for some reason, the show, maybe at the time, just didn't really appeal to me. So I haven't really watched any of it.
Go back and watch. Yeah. Get it. When you get invested in it, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. The first few seasons feel cheesy because it is, you know, 96, 97, 98. Like, oh boy, some of the effects are, to be spoken for. But, you know, that becomes part of the charm of the show after a while. And they do get better as they get into, I think they ran until like 2005 or 2006 with SG-1 anyway. And and the character development was interesting. In the last two seasons, I think it was, drawn a blank, MacGyver. Who plays MacGyver? The actor. Three-part name. Come on. the listeners are probably, anyway. He plays,
oh my gosh.
Colonel
O'Neill.
Why'd
you have to ask?
Yeah, I know. It's like, we weren't thinking on that wavelength yet, but he plays Colonel O'Neill and he steps back. And then Ben Browder, who we know from Farscape, steps in and also brings in Claudia Black from Farscape. So, but it doesn't feel like Farscape. They do a really good job. You're like, wait a minute. But after about four or five shows, like, oh, these are totally cool characters here. And it still has a fun charm to it. So it's, good show. I liked SG-1 a whole lot. It's kind of got that, Firefly kind of charm to it.
Yeah. See,
Donna pulls it up. It was Richard.
We got Christina, Norris and John Miller Jr. Yeah. Both yelling at us. Richard Dean Anderson.
And Donna pulled it up on IMDb. Thank you, Richard Dean Anderson. Here, everybody gets
so stupid for not. Well, you know, it's one of those things when you ask somebody, what's the guy's name in Star Wars? He played the little young guy. You know, we both kind of space on it. Just a suggestion that you might not know it.
There was one season of Tales from the Loop. Okay.
That's a new series.
Eight episodes. IMDb gave it 7.5 also, so I'm right on track.
Okay.
We're following up with late breaking news on the podcast. Thank you, Donna. Just off camera and never on mic, my wife. And that brings us to the Geek Library. We need the Geek Library music then.
Yeah.
There it is.
I'm going to let you take this one.
Okay. Scientists finally solve the mystery behind a 100-year-old chemistry experiment. Scientists may finally understand the mysterious transition behind a century-old chemistry experiment. The details of this transformation in which adding electrons to a bright blue ammonia solution morphs into a lustrous metallic bronze having long eluded scientists. The new study reveals the subtle details of this change and shows that this transformation is gradual rather than sudden. Quote, what we've done successfully is that we've pretty much understood how these solutions behave at a wide range of concentrations using a microjet technique, said the study co-author Ryan McMullen, a doctoral student in chemistry at the University of Southern California. This technique, which involves shooting hair-thin streams of solution through a vacuum, not the Hoover in your living room, has not been
used. I do
that
every day.
Shooting thin streams. Has not been used on the lustrous liquid before. And the discovery could open up new types of reactions in organic chemistry in the future, McMullen told Live Science. So it goes into the question, what is a metal? Well, metals are a diverse group. Some, like lithium, are light enough to float, while others, like lead or osmium, are extremely dense. Some require incredibly high temperatures to melt, while others melt quite easily. Mercury, for example, melts at minus 38.3 degrees Celsius. which is roughly the same temperature in Fahrenheit. Ultimately, ooh, that would be cool to go outside when it's really cold and see if you can get mercury to solidify. Never thought of that.
It had to be pretty cold, I'd imagine.
About minus 40 degrees Fahrenheit and Celsius, yes.
Well, you've had that in Wisconsin, right?
Occasionally on rare, you know, it's usually when we do that, throw the hot water up and make steam in the air experiment.
Yeah, not on yourself, but yes.
Ultimately, yes. What metals have in common is their ability to conduct electricity at absolute zero, the point at which molecular movement from heat essentially halts. But how do some non-metals transform into metals? Well, you listen to loud rock music. In a new study, researchers answered that question by adding, you just got it?
Yeah.
That was a fun reaction.
It must have been the lag.
Darn Discord latency. Like five seconds. Yeah. In a new study, researchers answered that question by adding metals to liquid ammonia. First, the researchers condensed ammonia, which is a gas at room temperature, into a liquid by cooling it to negative 27.4 Fahrenheit or minus 33 C. Then they added their sodium, lithium, or potassium, which are all alkali metals. Rather famously, these metals react explosively when submerged in water. Yes, we've all done that experiment in high school. Well, the teacher did the experiment because it's too dangerous for the kids to screw around with. The experiments were done in collaboration with scientists from Czech Academy of Sciences and the Fritz Haber Institute of the Max Planck Society in Berlin, as well as the researchers in Japan and France. Sorry if it sounds like we're hurting ourselves when we read these stories. We obviously are.
Yeah.
The result was an expected reaction, which is good. You know, you want to know your sunny day results. The liquid ammonia pulled electrons from the metal. Those electrons then became trapped between the ammonia molecules, creating the so-called solvated electrons, and researchers hoped to study. At low concentrations, the result was blue, non-metallic liquid. As the solvate or trapped electrons piled up, though, the solution transitioned to shiny bronze. The next change was to investigate how the solvated electrons behaved at different concentrations. This involved shooting a microjet of the solution about the width of a human hair through a beam of synchrotron X-rays. I'm not making this up. This is real stuff. Which are very high energy X-ray beams. The X-rays excited the solvated electrons. Ooh, it's getting titillating now. Using them to hop out of the liquid cage of ammonia molecules. The researchers could then measure how much energy it took to release the solvated electrons. Well, this article goes on for a bit and is very interesting for you chemistry types. Check it out. But I didn't know you could turn a nonmetal into a metal.
You should have got Julie on.
Could have done that, except it's a little late for her right now. Well, same time zone you're in, but
yeah.
So interesting stuff, and that's why we called this episode, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the precipitate. Wait, we need the drum. There. That's about all the humor you're going to get. So
all right, well,
one more for you, Craig, that could be a potential energy problem solver coming up.
Yeah, so nuclear powerballs may make meltdowns a thing of the past. Sorry, I was just hanging on there for, never mind. So, I'm sorry, I'm cracking myself up, you know. Anyway, the basic idea behind the nuclear power plants is the same. Convert the heat created by the nuclear fission into electricity. This is, there are several ways to do this, but in each case, it involves a delicate balancing act between safety and efficiency. A nuclear reactor works best when the core is really hot, but if it gets too hot, it can cause a meltdown and the environment will get poisoned and people may die and it will take billions of dollars to clean up the mess. Blah, blah, blah. We've heard it a million times. Well, the last time this happened was less than a decade ago when a massive earthquake followed by a series of tsunamis caused a meltdown at the Fukushima Daiichi plant in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
A new generation of reactors coming online in the next few years aims to make these kind of disasters a thing of the past. Not only will these reactors be smaller and more efficient than the current ones, current power plants, but their designers claim that it'll be virtually meltdown proof. Their secret.
And the Titanic is unsinkable.
Right. So their secret, millions of sub-millimeter size grains of uranium, individually wrapped, not for resale, in protective shells. Yes, it's called TRISO fuel, and it's like radioactive gobstopper.
This is kind of interesting stuff, because it effectively, the article goes on to say, normally when you've got uranium in the core, you use control rods to control how much fission is going on, which heats up the water, turns the steam turbines, et cetera, et cetera. This stuff sort of encapsulates the control rods into these almost like bullet-sized cylinders of uranium. So they're self-controlling, and you know, you can't really have a meltdown of just one of these things. So it's kind of protected. It's in its own little case to release the energy, heat the water, but not get so hot that it melts down. Now, the cool part about this is, they said normal reactors right now can only get up to about 1200 degrees before they sort of get this runaway out of control meltdown effect. The tests they've done with the encapsulated ones, they can get it up over 3000 degrees Fahrenheit, 1200 right. to 3000. So almost three times as hot. And as the article stated earlier, the hotter the water, the more efficient it's going to run. Although if water turns to steam at 212, do you really need to get it up to 3000 degrees? I'm not sure what you get after all of that energy efficiency, right. but it's a nice way to see science is still working on getting us out of the fossil fuel age, getting us into some clean energy. Nuclear, yes, it's potentially dangerous. We've seen Chernobyl, we've seen Three Mile Island, we've seen Fukushima. But you know, we're not, if we had enough of this, I think I heard a report that it was on History 101 on Netflix. It was something like France has the most nuclear reactors. Have you heard of any accidents in France lately? Not me.
No, relatively speaking, I think they're pretty safe as far as, you know, obviously the tsunamis didn't help. I mean, you know, my dad's worked on a bunch of them, designing, you know, the electrical stuff with the power plants. And he said, generally speaking, they're relatively safe.
Well, but, the other thing is that the current power plants can take years to build. I mean, 5 to 20 years to get one online. Mm-hmm. This means with this new fuel, I'm going to call it that, because that's what the uranium is. With the new fuel, it cuts down. You don't need this big encased thick concrete building for your reactor core.
Right.
They said you could scale this down to the size of, you know, a cargo container like you put on the cargo ships.
Yeah.
And that would be the whole size of your reactor, making it, you know, hopefully if it does meltdown, it's a much smaller meltdown, but you could also make it more widely distributed. You wouldn't have, you know, a few power plants all over the place. You could put them in more places, making it more practical.
Right. And you know what? If Bill Gates was funding a project to make a safer power plant, and they were about to roll it out in China where they're building some power plants.
Yeah.
And they got the okay, but then the trade war started. So then they had to stop. So they kind of put it on the sideline. But if you go watch the Bill Gates, there's a 3-part thing on Netflix.
Yep.
Talking about him. And they mentioned that, I think it's in the third one. And it sounded exciting. Actually, it sounded similar to this, where they were smaller and more efficient. And there was a way in which that if it started to go nuclear, you know, with the overheating, it would do that. It would kind of be able to stop itself.
Yeah, that I think we watched that it was over 6 months ago, because it was before the whole COVID thing broke out. And he was talking about viruses, along with clean water. You know, he and Melinda are doing some wonderful things But it didn't take a rocket scientist to go, you know what? The next big disaster is going to come from viruses. And guess what? It did. And it will.
If we could just figure out that blue screen of death, we'd be all right.
It's not his job anymore. Someone else is running that company.
Okay.
All right. That brings us to the end. We have reached an hour on the clock, on my recording clock anyway. Thank you for everybody for hanging out with us. Our question of the week this week, if you want to think about it until we get it on social media, or you just want to answer whenever, is which fictional world would you live in? I wonder how many people are going to say Avatar.
I was thinking Bizarro's world.
I don't know. There's not too many that you see in movies or books that are perfect, because there's always some antagonist or something going on that makes it dangerous. Otherwise, it wouldn't be much of a story.
Yeah. So, I mean, would you go live in the Star Wars universe?
Teletubby land. Nothing bad ever happens there. You just can't understand what the heck they're saying.
I can't understand. Tell me where I can buy a sandwich.
Does your belly get Netflix?
Yeah. All right. Oh, so boy.
You've had fun with that. And I know we have. We want to hear what fictional world you would live in. And our Patreon topic this week, if you are one of our patrons, you can look forward to this, or you may have already listened to it. We're not sure what order you're doing this in, but we know what we're going to be doing next. We're going to be talking about geek fatigue. So that's our topic. Craig put it on the list. We're going to go
from
the starter
topic, we should say.
Starter topic, yes, because the conversations often meander and wander for about 15 or 20 minutes wherever we want. And until then, we look forward to talking to you again real soon. Thank you again for listening and hanging out with us on the live stream or watching on YouTube later or whatever you're doing. Appreciate it very much. New or returning viewer, participant, audience, thank you to our patron people once again. If you want to get in touch with us, you can call the listener line at 707-530-2428. We'd love to hear from you. Still there. Haven't heard from many of you lately. You're stuck at home. Why not give us a call?
Make sure it works, for crying out loud.
Please. Because, you know, hundreds of shows can go by and there's a technical issue and nobody tells us.
That's right.
We finally got that fixed.
So, yeah.
Or send us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com. But until then, Craig, give us a binary high five.
All right. 101.
Thanks, everybody.